Welcome to the deep dive. You know, we all face pain that's just, well, part of life.
It really is. Difficulties, disappointments, struggles. Nobody gets a free pass.
Exactly. No one's exempt. But what if the way we respond to all that stuff isn't just about, you know, getting through it?
What if it's about unlocking something deeper, a kind of strength?
Yeah, a profound, maybe even counterintuitive strength that could actually change how we experience suffering itself.
That's precisely what we're exploring today. It's more than just easing pain. It's about fundamentally changing your relationship with it.
Ah, yeah.
So instead of feeling like a victim of your circumstances, you become, well, an active participant in your own healing, turning tough moments into chances for connection, starting with yourself.
Okay, so today we're taking a deep dive into the heart's response.
Hmm.
It might sound a bit soft, this idea,
mm-hmm.
but it's actually pretty radical. Compassion, and maybe especially self-compassion.
Right.
And this deep dive, it's built from your source material specifically, excerpts from 06 and appropriate response compassion.
That's the one.
Our mission really is to unpack how compassion works, like how it acts as this resilient force helping us navigate life's challenges.
And why it's not just some nice idea, but maybe a necessity for real well-being and freedom.
Yeah, exploring why this ancient wisdom feels so relevant right now for our modern lives.
It really is about figuring out what it means to respond appropriately, you know, wisely when things inevitably get tough.
So let's maybe set the scene with Gautama, often known as the Buddha. His big realization right at the start was about this inherent difficulty, this pain baked into our existence. He called it dukkha.
Mm-hmm, dukkha, that challenging landscape of pain, difficulties, disappointments,
yeah.
The stuff we all face.
Right, so what's the big deal about just acknowledging that instead of trying to, I don't know, ignore it or pretend it's not happening?
Well, acknowledging dukkha is absolutely the starting point because our usual reactions, you know, fear, anger, despair, pushing it away, denial, even blaming ourselves or others.
Yeah, those are common.
They're all forms of resistance, really, like fighting against the tide. Gautama's whole motivation, everything he taught, it came from compassion for this universal suffering. He wanted to help us find freedom from it, or at least within it.
Okay.
And the source material suggests the only truly wise, the only appropriate response to this reality is the heart's response. It's compassion.
Leaning in, not pushing away.
Exactly. Leaning into reality.
That makes a lot of sense. And the sources use this great metaphor, building a RFT to freedom. We've talked before about the planks, the five gifts, our commitment to harmlessness.
Right, the foundation.
But these sources say the ropes, the things that bind the raft together and give it strength, are woven from these four appropriate responses, traditionally called the four Brahma Viharas.
Yes.
What makes these ropes so vital for holding our raft together when we hit, you know, stormy weather?
What's really fascinating about these four qualities, these boundless qualities of the heart, is their dual nature. They aren't just about how we treat others.
Okay.
They're absolutely essential for our own inner state, our own well-being. They show up as self forms too. They kind of bind us to our own experience and to others. They create cohesion.
Like a two-way street for the heart, then. Is that a way to think about it?
Precisely. A perfect way to put it. The first one, and this is our main focus today, our first rope, is compassion.
Right.
This is about responding to suffering, whether it's happening in us or someone else, with genuine care, with empathy, and that heart's desire to ease it. And inwardly, it shows up as self-compassion.
Okay, self-compassion.
Yeah.
And what about the other three ropes? What makes up the rest of this strong binding?
So then we have kindness, which is simply wishing well-being and happiness for yourself and for others. That manifests as self-kindness.
Makes sense.
Following that is appreciative joy. This is where you feel genuinely glad about the happiness and good fortune you see again in yourself and in others. It becomes self-appreciation.
So not envy or comparison?
No, not at all. Genuine delight.
I can definitely see how celebrating wins, even small ones, for ourselves and others, would make the raft feel stronger.
Oh, absolutely. It really shores things up. And finally, there's equanimity. This is about maintaining balance, a kind of impartiality and clarity, even when life's doing its usual thing, throwing curveballs, changing all the time. And we cultivate this inside ourselves as self-balance. These four qualities together, they really do form that strong, flexible rope holding our raft together through whatever waters we face. They're like emotional sustenance.
Okay, so let's really zero in on compassion now. The first, the fundamental appropriate response when we recognize suffering. We often react by pushing back, resisting pain. Why is compassion the key alternative? Why is it that first crucial rope?
It's crucial because, well, think about it. If we respond to pain with aversion or fear or anger, we're just adding another layer of suffering on top of the original hurt.
Right, making it worse.
Exactly. It's like tightening a knot that's already causing pain. And denial, that just stops us from dealing with the situation realistically. Despair just freezes us.
Yeah.
Those reactions don't actually solve anything. They just deepen the suffering. But compassion allows us to acknowledge the reality of the pain, to say, yes, this hurts, or yeah, this is really difficult. Yeah. But without adding that extra layer of resistance or judgment, it opens the heart instead of slamming it shut. It takes courage, actually, to be with suffering our own and others and to genuinely want to alleviate it if we can.
That really reminds me of Kristen Neff, you know, the researcher who's done so much work on self-compassion.
Oh, absolutely. Her work is pivotal.
She had this quote that just lands. Suffering is part of the shared human experience. Self-compassion is not a luxury. It is a necessity for healing.
Why do you think she uses that word necessity? Not just helpful, but necessary.
It's a powerful choice of word, isn't it? I think it's because without it, we just keep perpetuating cycles of harm, often towards ourselves. Gautama's teachings actually elaborate on this, talking about two aspects of compassion that fit right in with Neff's idea.
First, there's like an instinctive empathy, what he called a trembling of the heart when faced with suffering, that immediate visceral reaction.
It's a gut feeling.
Yeah. But second, there's an active compassion, a sort of kindness in action, which is about responding to suffering with wisdom, with care. So it's both a feeling and a skillful action.
I see.
And when something's a necessity, well, it means it's fundamental for our well-being, right? Not just an optional extra.
The source material also talks about shared humanity, saying something like, it makes no sense to talk about my pain or your pain. It only makes sense to talk about pain. How does realizing suffering is shared help break down barriers within us and between people?
That's such a profound point. When we really get that suffering isn't just my unique problem, but it's universal. That every single being, just like us, wants to be free from pain, it dissolves that feeling of separation.
Wow.
Suddenly, my pain isn't something isolating or shameful. It's just part of the human condition. And Gautama really emphasized this. Compassion has to start with ourselves before we can genuinely offer it to others. So not self-blame.
Exactly. Instead of that harsh inner critic, which so many of us have, he encouraged gentleness, patience. When we practice self-compassion, really practice it, we start to soften that critic. We recognize that making mistakes, feeling pain, being imperfect, that's just being human.
Yeah.
And the source puts it beautifully. It says, compassion and wisdom are like the two wings of a bird. You need both to fly. You need that self-understanding alongside that kindness.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting, I think, especially for today. This whole human struggle, particularly when it involves patterns of escape or avoidance. It seems to thrive when there's harsh self-judgment, shame, isolation.
Yes, absolutely.
So how does compassion, specifically self-compassion, tackle those deep-seated patterns directly?
That's a critical link. The source uses this term intoxication, not necessarily literal substances, but as any attempt to escape suffering.
It often comes from a place of deep pain, doesn't it? A way to try and numb things or find some kind of fleeting relief from distress. Gautama taught that clinging to those temporary fixes, those fleeting pleasures, actually leads to more suffering in the long run.
Right. Cycle continues.
Exactly. So the path to healing isn't about judging ourselves harshly for seeking escape. It's about bringing compassionate awareness to the underlying pain that's driving it, understanding the suffering behind the pattern.
So looking at the root cause, not just the behavior. And you mentioned shame earlier that's massive for so many people. How does self-compassion specifically start to dismantle shame? Because shame seems to fuel those destructive self-sabotaging loops.
It really does. Shame and self-judgment are incredibly powerful fuels for destructive behaviors. They whisper or sometimes shout that we're fundamentally flawed, not good enough, unworthy. Mm-hmm. Gautama's approach, though, offers self-acceptance as the bedrock for change. Imagine looking at your struggles, your screw-ups, your moments of feeling completely lost with the same warmth and understanding you'd give a dear friend.
That's a radical shift for many.
It is self-compassion. And it directly replaces that self-hatred or self-criticism with self-kindness.
Mm.
That's what actually allows healing to begin. It lets us see our patterns of escape not as some kind of moral failing, but through the lens of suffering that needs care. And that can break the cycle of shame and isolation.
And what about the compassion in action part, supporting ourselves and others? Because these struggles often feel incredibly lonely.
They absolutely do. And destructive compulsions, these patterns, they tend to thrive in isolation. But healing, real healing happens in connection. Gotama was apparently a big proponent of spiritual fellowship sangha, where people could support each other with compassion and wisdom.
Community.
Yes. And it makes me think of Johann Hari's insight, too. You know, he famously said something like, the opposite of problematic patterns is connection.
Yeah, I've heard that.
It just highlights that we don't get free from being caught in these patterns alone. We need to both offer compassion and learn to receive it.
That's powerful. And just one more thing on these patterns when we talk about triggers, those really intense cravings that can just pop up.
Yeah.
How does compassion help us deal with those moments?
Well, instead of seeing cravings or triggers as enemies, we have to fight, which, let's be honest, often just leads to more frustration and beating ourselves up.
Right.
Compassion lets us meet those experiences with kindness. Instead of reacting with aggression, even internally, we can pause. We can ask a different kind of question, a more compassionate one. Okay, what unmet need might be underneath this craving right now?
Shifting the focus.
Completely. It shifts us from a state of conflict to one of, well, understanding and self-care. It's really about moving from feeling crushed by difficulty to being able to hold it with understanding and a genuine desire to heal.
So bringing this all down to earth. Mm-hmm. What does this mean first, practically? How do we actually start cultivating this compassion day to day, especially towards ourselves when things get tough?
One of the most direct and, I think, powerful ways comes straight from Dr. Kristen Neff's work. Yeah. She offers these really simple phrases you can use right in the middle of a moment of distress.
Okay.
So imagine you're feeling overwhelmed or hurt or disappointed. You can just gently say to yourself, maybe even put a hand on your heart.
Mm-hmm.
This is a moment of suffering. Just acknowledging it.
Right.
Then suffering is part of life. Normalizing it. Connecting to that shared humanity.
Okay.
Then, may I be kind to myself in this moment? A clear intention.
I like that.
And finally, may I give myself the compassion I need? Offering that kindness directly.
Wow. I can actually feel a kind of softening just hearing you say those phrases. It's amazing how they work. Acknowledging the difficulty. Like you said, normalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Reminding yourself you're not alone and feeling this way,
mm-hmm.
and then actively offering kindness.
Exactly.
For me, that idea of being gentle with yourself feels almost revolutionary, you know, in a world that often pushes harsh self-discipline or trying to be perfect all the time.
It really does cut against the grain, doesn't it?
Is there a scientific reason those simple phrases pack such a punch? Why they seem to disarm that inner critic?
Oh, absolutely. This isn't just, you know, wishful thinking. There's solid science behind it. Research in neuroscience, psychology, a lot of it led by Kristen Neff herself, clearly links practicing self-compassion to tangible benefits.
Like what?
Like released anxiety and depression, increased emotional resilience, bouncing back better from setbacks, better emotional regulation overall. It turns out our brains are actually fundamentally wired for caregiving.
Wired for caregiving.
Yeah. And when we turn that caregiving system inwards towards ourselves, the positive effects are measurable. It seems to activate the same kind of soothing systems in the brain that get turned on when we're caring for someone else.
Fascinating. So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's do our remember to remember. Remember that compassion, and especially self-compassion, is that crucial first strand of the rope binding our RAFT together. It's presented as the wise, the kind, the truly appropriate response when we recognize dukkha, that inherent pain, difficulty, disappointment that Garima pointed to right at the start.
Mm-hmm. Instead of piling on more resistance or judgment or despair, compassion allows us to meet suffering with an open heart, with a genuine wish to ease it. It gives us that emotional fuel, that sustenance to keep going, making sure our raft stays afloat even in choppy seas.
So before we finish, maybe a few questions for you, the listener, to reflect on as you think about all this. First, What does this idea of self-compassion actually mean to you personally? Does it feel, I don't know, accessible, difficult, maybe just unfamiliar?
And can you bring to mind a time when responding to a difficulty with compassion, maybe it came from you, maybe from someone else, made a real positive difference in how things felt or unfolded?
And maybe the toughest one. Can you genuinely offer compassion to yourself right now or when things are hard? And if that feels difficult, maybe just gently ask yourself, why not? What gets in the way?
Yeah, just something to gently explore. We really encourage you to consider how this quality of compassion might become a more constant companion for you, helping you hold the truth of your life, all of it, with a bit more courage and maybe a lot more grace.